Good afternoon. Welcome once again to Line One, Your Health Connection. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. My guest today is Dr. Victor Strasburger. Dr. Strasburger is chief of the Division of Adolescent Medicine, where he is professor of pediatrics and also professor of family and community medicine. This is at the University of New Mexico School of Medicine. Dr. Strasburger is an authority on the effects of media on children and adolescents. And he's written extensively, publishing 150 articles and 12 books on adolescent medicine and the effects of television on children and adolescents. His most recent textbook is Children, Adolescents, and the Media, which was co-authored with Barbara Wilson and published in 2009. He's appeared on National Public Radio and Newsweek, The Today Show, among others, and he's received an Outstanding Lifetime Achievement Award from the Academy of Pediatrics, as well as the first recipient of a Media Advocacy Award from the Academy as well. Let me remind our listeners, if you've got questions or comments during the program today, you can ask your questions or make comments by calling 550-8433. That's our local number, 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752, and our email address is line1@ksKA.org. Dr. Strasburger, welcome once again to Line One.
Thanks, Thad. You left out Oprah. I've been on Oprah several times.
You know, I kind of did that on purpose. I try to promote critical thinking on this program, and somehow I can't get Oprah and critical thinking out in the same sentence. You got a way to do that?
She's tremendously powerful. She was responsible for the book club for several years that got people, adults, reading. She's very charismatic. There are a lot of good things about Oprah.
Yeah, she's not a friend of, well, I don't know if she's a friend of immunizations or not, but she certainly has had on a number of people who don't quite want to tell the story the way it really seems to be about immunization. So we don't have to focus on that. But I did not say that you had been on Oprah. So congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. I think.
All right. I'm always struggling with where to start, and I always think definitions and putting things in perspective is a good idea. What do we mean by media if we're going to talk about the effects of media on children and adolescents?
We mean everything from TV and movies to the internet, cell phones, texting, sexting, print media, books, you name it.
Is new social media an appropriate term to define? Is that distinguishable enough now?
I think so. Social networking, social media has become a really powerful force with teenagers, although it's changing all the time. And I think Twitter is probably going to become a thing of the past. Texting will always be there for the time being, and certainly Facebook and MySpace are extremely important to teenagers.
We've been struggling, probably, or at least in the developed world, for many, many years now with the effects of media, and I guess it's certainly fair to say it's changing society and has changed the world. Is that correct, and in what ways would you answer the changes that have occurred because of media?
I'll give you one easy example. I have successfully predicted the outcome of the last three presidential elections based on the telegenicity of the candidates alone, so how they appear on television. I can predict who will win a presidential election. Now, that the concern that the media have such a major role in presidential politics actually goes back to the Kennedy-Nixon debates in 1960. Those people who watched the debates on TV thought Kennedy won because he was so good-looking, and Nixon had a 5 o'clock shadow and sweated profusely. But those people who listened to the debates on radio thought Nixon had won because he was more eloquent. So it's a major concern. The media affect all of us in various ways, most of which we're not even willing to admit. There's something called the third person principle, which is that third person effect. which is that nobody thinks the media influences them or their children. It's those other bozos who are influenced.
So what does that mean, that the media is such a powerful influence on who we might choose to lead a country and all the permutations and computations and things you can make from a statement like that? What
it means is that the media teach. Uh-huh. We learn from the media. Uh-huh. We can learn erroneous things from the internet. We can learn good health information from the internet. There are more than 100 pro-anorexia nervosa websites, for example. That's not so good. There are websites that will teach you, if you're a teenager, how to cut on yourself. That's not so good. But there are lots of websites that will give you good health information. The media teach, and the only question is, what are they teaching and what are kids learning from the media? And the answer is they're learning a lot. They're learning about violence. They're learning about sex, about drugs, about food and food advertising, about what it means to be a man or a woman. What does it mean to be successful? What does it mean to be sexy? The media give kids all those answers in ways that are sometimes responsible and sometimes not, but they fill in the blanks when we don't do it as adults, when we don't do it in school or we don't do it at home.
So it's almost a societal need. I'm not using the word obligation to, if this is such a powerful teacher, to help each other understand what it's teaching and how it works, as well as to perhaps place controls on what's being taught.
Yes, and schools are not doing that. The United States is one of the few Western countries that does not teach media literacy, what used to be called media literacy, now called media education. Canada does it, Britain does it, Australia does it, Western European countries do it. We don't. I mean, if you think about it, 100 years ago, to be literate meant that you could read and write. To be literate now means you can program your VCR or your digital recorder, you can text, you can email, you can download, you can IM, you can download movies, one would hope legally, not illegally. You can order things on the internet. Being literate just is totally different now than it used to be. And we can teach kids about media literacy, and we don't. And it really is probably as important as teaching them, the three R's. Of course, the three R's have become the four R's. The fourth R is now retail.
I would think of, well, let me ask you, why are we not teaching about media literacy if most of the other developed countries are?
I think schools are afraid of media. I've started writing about this. I really like to talk to groups of teachers because I think there are creative ways of using media in schools. There's a Florida teacher who asks her students to bring their cell phones to class, and then she texts them in Spanish, and they have to respond in Spanish. In Georgia, parents can track their kids' cafeteria purchases at lunchtime to make sure they're eating nutritional meals. A lot of parents have experience now with checking on their kids' academic progress online, looking at their grades. Teachers have websites. Those are all useful ways of using media. But ever since Sesame Street, I think teachers have worried about media, that they have to compete with the media, and instead of using media creatively. So if I were teaching 7th or 8th grade English, I wouldn't make my students read Romeo and Juliet. For one thing, it's about two teenagers who have sex and then kill themselves. For another, it's not one of his best plays. And for a third, making 12 and 13-year-olds read Elizabethan English is like torture. But there are 10 different DVD versions available of Romeo and Juliet. And Shakespeare wrote his plays to be performed and to be seen, not to be read. So if I were teaching Shakespeare, I would show them Romeo and Juliet, and then I would give them a couple of passages to read, and we go over what Elizabethan English is like. So there are ways of using media well, and there are ways of not using it so well. So schools have a difficult time with sexting, for example. Somewhere between 4 and 20% of kids have either sent or received a sexually explicit text message. And some schools in some states are prosecuting them as, sexual offenders. And that's just wrong. I mean, kids are going to do stupid things. Their brains are programmed to do dumb things. The adolescent brain's not fully mature until age 25 or so. So schools really need to start ratcheting up how they interact with media.
Is it just the schools that...
It's everyone. I think parents need to control media. I think parents don't have a good handle on how much time their kids are spending. Parents of very young children, babies, are getting infant videos, baby Einstein, baby Shakespeare for baby shower presents, and plopping their poor little unsuspecting sweethearts in front of the TV screen when they're 6 or 8 months old, not knowing that that could lead to language delays. There are now 6 studies showing that babies exposed to screen time under the age of 2 years of age, may suffer from language delays. Beyond 2, media can be very pro-social, can teach kids numbers, letters, racial tolerance. Sesame Street, of course, is the gold standard for all of that. But parents don't realize the kids are spending 7 hours a day with screens.
And to complete the argument, the parents are getting their education from the media.
Yes.
And that's why they think they're doing a good thing by Baby Einstein.
They are, and Baby Einstein's certainly entertaining, and I think if you sat with your baby on your lap and watched Baby Einstein and repeated the words and said, oh, look at the cow, and the cow says moo, and all that, it may in fact be an educational experience. All of the studies that have been done with kids parked alone in front of the TV set, not with parents interacting with them. Parents need to realize that they are the single most important teachers of their infants. And that babies are very smart, and they can tell the difference between human beings on a TV screen and human beings in real life.
You take just a second to remind our listeners, if you've got questions or comments about the effects of media on infants and children and adolescents, or any comments you hear today and would like to ask a question or make a comment yourself, you can reach us at 550-8433. It's our local number, 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And you can email us at line1@kska.org. That's line1, all spelled out, L-I-N-E-O-N-E, all one word. Why is it that language development might be hampered by early infancy experience with TVs and videos?
Infants' brains are developing, and they're kind of plastic. They develop in response to what the babies are seeing in their environment. And seeing a human face is 100 times more important and interesting for a baby, a real-life human face in person, than seeing a human face on a TV screen. So they learn from the interaction with mom or dad or whoever is playing with them. They don't learn from watching a TV screen where they can't interact. They can't you know, nobody is there to read their facial expression, to laugh with them, to repeat something that may need to be repeated. Babies are much smarter than we give them credit for. Barry Brazelton was one of my teachers at Harvard Medical School, and he always used to say that. Babies are much smarter than we think they are.
I remember recently reading an article where it helps to just talk to a baby, not just talking around a baby, but that seemed to even increase language development more rapidly.
Yes. I still see babies. I do adolescent medicine, but I do a clinic once a week with the residents, and I still see babies. And I can tell you which babies are being read to and talked to and which babies are being planted in front of the TV set for an hour or two a day. And according to the research, 70% of American babies under the age of 2 years are watching TV for an hour or two a day. That's not good.
I've maybe to the point of being obnoxious, have tried to promote the idea that we need to be teaching better ways of thinking critically and understanding how we know what we know. And when I hear you say that, parents need more understanding of, and our kids need better understanding of media literacy, I just hear that as a subcategory of the fact we're not teaching people how to think and understand what we're exposed to and how it affects us.
That puts us back to schools. Because in 5 years, you will have on your, instead of a watch on your wrist, you'll have a watch plus a 5-gigabyte computer, and you'll press a button and say, when was the first Peloponnesian War? And it'll tell you. Mm-hmm. So why schools are still insisting that kids memorize facts is absolutely beyond me. I mean, I think you need to memorize the multiplication tables, and you need to know roughly when the Civil War was fought. But I think it's much more important to know why the Civil War was fought and why Lincoln was a great president and the fact that Lincoln was not anti-slavery when he first took office. They're fascinating. You know, why the North won the Civil War. Those are all things that you won't be able to ask your wristwatch or your computer. Mm-hmm. But they're things that you need to know. And I think schools are not doing a good job of teaching critical thinking, and there's a lot of debate about that now among educators. How many facts does a child or a teenager need to memorize? Do you need to know when the Battle of Manassas was fought, either the first or the second one? I don't think so. I think it's nice to know that the Civil War occurred in the 1860s and that Lincoln was president. But how many names and dates do you need to memorize?
And I would, just to expand on this, you need to know how to analyze the information you're getting, and in particularly learn whether or not you can trust the information you're getting. I mean, there's plenty of information. How do we know what's reliable information?
Yeah, and increasingly because of the internet, which I think is 98% marvelous, I hardly ever go to the library anymore because I have a library at my desk. It's like having the great Library of Alexandria sitting on your desk. It's amazing what you can do with the computer, but yes, you need to be able to sift through a lot of not only information but opinion. There are thousands and tens of thousands of blogs out there. Who are you going to believe? And who makes sense? And what are they basing their opinions on? And can you check the facts?
What's their motivation?
It is going to get very complicated because the simple information is going to be on our wrists and immediately available.
Good point. Dr. Strasburger, we have a call. I want to take that call. Lou, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
Hi. I'm a pediatric speech therapist, and I work with a lot of little guys with late language. And sometimes parents come in and say, we bought him Baby Einstein and we watch it 8 hours a day. Well, that's an exaggeration. I'd like the references for his statement that says that when he said earlier that too much media, too much television can cause language delay.
Okay.
Yeah, there are six studies. The American Academy of Pediatrics has a policy statement that will be coming out, I think, in November or December, that will get a lot of publicity, that discusses this entire issue in detail and has all of the references. But basically, the six studies looked at babies and infants and found a significant number had language delays when they were exposed to screens versus those who aren't watching TV or movies or videos until after the age of two. When we made that statement in 1999 that parents should avoid screen time for their babies under the age of two, we made it up. It was common sense to us, but we just caught holy hell because it was not an evidence-based statement. It's now an evidence-based statement. And in addition, there are no studies that it accelerates your child, your baby's learning. So the onus shouldn't be on us to prove that it's dangerous. The onus should be on the makers of infant videos who are, you know, making $10 million a year to prove that they're not causing harm. I mean, in medicine, first do no harm is a major kind of rule. And a very recent review by Michael Rich and Marie Schmidt at Boston Children's Hospital found that there to date have been no studies that parking a kid in front of the TV set makes them smarter or showing them baby videos.
Doesn't Kaiser, one of the foundations, have a long bibliography list that she might be referred to?
Kaiser, unfortunately, has stopped doing media research as of a few months ago, okay. I think as a cost-cutting mechanism. But they were, for decades, they were the only major foundation in the country interested in children and media. But the American Academy of Pediatrics will have this policy statement out, and you'll be reading about it very, very soon.
Okay, well, thank you.
All right, Lou, thanks for your question. We need to take a short break here in a minute, but let's maybe flesh out the Baby Einstein story as an example of what really we've been talking about here. Do you want to expand that issue?
We need more research on it. I mean, there are only these six studies compared to 2,000 or 3,000 on media violence or several hundred on drugs or obesity. And probably several dozen on sex and sexuality. So the infant video story is not by any means complete. We don't, you know, there may be a study that comes out tomorrow that says kids learn from infant videos if parents are interacting with them at the same time that they're watching the video. Similarly, the whole attention deficit disorder controversy, we don't have enough studies on that. There are a couple, there are a handful, really, of studies that link early screen time with attention deficit disorder, but we don't know if that's cause and effect or just association. Is it the kids with short attention spans like to watch TV and are entertained, or is it... Mm-hmm. Does watching TV and movies really cause ADD and ADHD? The sad fact is there isn't any money to do this research. It's very difficult to do. The government funds very few studies. I mean, when you think about it, the media potentially have an impact on virtually every concern that parents and pediatricians have about kids, whether it's aggression or sex or drugs or obesity or learning or school performance. The media play a role, and yet we can't get studies funded. I mean, it is just amazing to me.
Let's take a short break here, and then I want to come back and get into this a little bit deeper and probably move up into older children and adolescents. You're listening to Line 1, your health connection in Anchorage. You can reach us at 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752, and our email address, line1@kska.org. After this short break, we'll continue to take any calls and emails and talk with Dr. Victor Strasburger about the effects of media on children and adolescents. This is Line 1, your health connection.
If you missed part of today's program, or if you'd like to listen to Line 1, Your Health Connection again, tune in tonight at 8. Remember, tonight's recorded rebroadcast will not be taking telephone calls. Following this afternoon's broadcast, Line 1 will be available on our website at kska.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome back. You're listening to Line 1, your health connection. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard, and today we're discussing the effects of media on infants, children, and adolescents with Dr. Victor Strasburger. He is Chief of Adolescent Medicine and at the University of New Mexico School of Medicine and a true authority on this issue. You can email questions and comments to us at line1@kska.org, and you can give us a call during this next 30 minutes or so at 550-8433. Outside of Anchorage, our number is 1-888-353-5752. And let me remind everybody, tonight's rebroadcast will be at 10 o'clock, not at 8 o'clock. But also remember, you can go to ksk.org at any time and listen to these programs. I also want to do one bit of promotion. The Alaska State Medical Association is going to provide a free sponsored medical information series this Friday, August 20th at the BP Energy Center from 6 to 7 p.m. The topic is going to be ophthalmology. The specific comments are going to be made about cataracts, glaucoma, and macular degeneration with three local ophthalmologists. This Friday, free information on these issues at the BP Energy Center from 6 to 7 o'clock. Perhaps to follow through on this a little bit and maybe get into a broader age range, can we talk about the examples or the effect the media has in eating and eating disorders and one of our biggest problems in this country is obesity?
Yep. So kids see somewhere between 5,000 and 10,000 food ads per year on television alone. 80 to 90% of those ads are for junk food or fast food. We spend more on fast food in this country than we do on cars or college education. And then we wonder why kids are obese. And it's clear that they're seeing foods advertised that are unhealthy for them. They learn from what they see. They bug their parents to buy those foods or to go out to McDonald's or Burger King. Fast food places have all these tie-ins with children's movies, and in a Happy Meal, you can get all sorts of nice little cartoon character playthings. Plus, kids are plopped in front of the TV set for 3 or 4 hours a day and in front of other media for another 3 hours. And we wonder why the prevalence of obesity has doubled in the past 20 or 30 years in the United States, and why for the first time, there are more overweight and obese adults than there are normal weight adults. We couldn't do a better job of making things unhealthy for our kids in terms of obesity. We don't give them very good school lunches. It's been a major controversy in Congress. Their fast food places tend to congregate around schools. Inner city neighborhoods don't have very good produce and fresh food. We subsidize high fructose corn syrup for sweetened products. We don't subsidize broccoli growers or vegetable growers. I mean, we just could not do a worse job in this country, and we're paying the price for it now.
Hopefully we'll have time to come back to some of these points. We now have about four callers holding on, so I want to take some of these calls. First, Carolyn, you're on line one.
Thank you very much. I'm shocked by the statement of fast food is greater than education. That is really amazing. But my question had to do with an observation of what parents and caregivers and any adult that's interacting with a child, not necessarily being badgered by questions, but just holding a child and soothing it. What are the adults missing out on in terms of the calming nature of holding any sentient being like a puppy dog or a kitty cat? I mean, that's been shown to calm people down, and I'm just wondering, you know, we're missing a lot of that. They call it bonding, but I think there's a lot deeper aspects to that word in terms of just what we as humans get when we are groomed, when we groom, or whatever way you want to look at it.
Well, actually, we were just talking about obesity. I've been trying to do a study for years. I want, when I see an overweight or obese child, I want to see if I can get that family to adopt a dog from a shelter and then look at and have the child agree to walk the dog for at least 20 minutes, you know, a couple times a day. And see what impact that has on the child's obesity. I mean, I'm a huge fan of cats and dogs. We have both. Blood pressure goes down when you have an animal. It's been well shown. I think there are better ways to soothe your children than parking them in front of the TV set. At the same time, I don't like to blame parents completely because the media are seductive. I mean, it is like candy for the eyes for kids, and it's very difficult for parents to say no, no, no all the time. You can't see that movie. You can't watch this TV show when all of their friends are going to see it. This is a peer pressure issue for parents. We're constantly criticizing teenagers for giving in to peer pressure, but parents cave into peer pressure, I think, just as much as teenagers do.
Well, you know, I sympathize, as you do, with parents, because everyone, most households now require two incomes. But again, it's a question of the child models after the parent. And if the parent has spent time holding the child and getting that connection, that emotional connection to the child, I think it helps the adults calm down their lives a
sure.
lot. To be
sure. I also think Dad wanted to talk about teenagers, and I also think that parents can use media constructively the way I'm suggesting schools could do. Parents, when they can watch TV with their older children and teenagers, and they can point to something and say, you know, why is there so much gunplay on TV, or why is she jumping into bed with him, or why is it funny when somebody's drunk and almost driving off the road? And instead of having the big talk with your preteen or your teenager, it's much less threatening to look at something on TV together and discuss it.
Well, Jan, real quickly, years ago when I lived in an American Samoa, I was shocked when I saw a lot of teenagers, not just the girls, but the young men holding children, sitting, because I'd never seen that in the U.S. Now, maybe if I lived in a small, grew up in a small rural area, which I thought I had, I would have seen that. But it was just like, wow, you know, these teenage boys are holding their cousins or you know, their sister's child or whatever. And I was really kind of surprised to see that and thought, we could sure use that in this country.
Yeah.
All righty. Thank you.
Thank you. Mary, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
Hi. I agree wholeheartedly that we parents allow too much television, too much computer, too much whatever. When my children were growing up, we didn't have a television, and my children had to read. This was mandatory. Every day, for 15 minutes minimum, they had to play outdoors. Of course, we lived in the cool, in a very hot climate, a country. We lived in New Mexico, and it was very, or El Paso, it was very, very hot. And so they had to play outside in the evenings or early mornings, running games. They played kickball or kick the can or hide and seek or whatever, ride their bicycles. We would go on bicycle rides. We would go camping. We would go hiking. But they don't do that nowadays, and it's too bad to see them. And television is a terrible babysitter, but it's so convenient because you don't have to spend money on a television. It just costs electricity. And unfortunately, money is very tight in most families. So I don't see kids playing outside anymore. And I've asked kids, why don't you go play kick the can or go play whatever, you know, little games that we used to play. And they don't even know what that is. They look at you as if you were a little bit crazy. So I think that we have done a very grave injustice to our children and to our country, because children in other countries can read better, can talk, speak better, can listen better, do everything so much better than we do. And even though that their school systems are not as great as ours, they do learn better. And my children would get, they would have a few coins to go get something to eat. Instead of going and getting a candy bar, they'd go buy a carrot or an apple or something. They'd look at me crazy if I said, well, go get your candy bar. No, they would rather have an apple or an orange. And you don't see that today. Not any.
Part of the reason that parents, kids aren't playing outside is that parents worry more about their kids.
That's true.
The neighborhoods are more dangerous. They know about internet predators and sexual predators. And some of that actually comes from media that we've all grown up with. There's something called the mean and scary world syndrome. And people who watch a lot of TV tend to think that the world is a much more violent place than it really is. I don't think that TV and movies are necessarily the enemy of reading. I think they can be synergistic, if you will. Again, the same thing as showing a Shakespeare play rather than making kids read it, but then letting them read the famous passages. I just have one anecdote about that. When my son was five, I wanted to read the Lion, Witch, and Wardrobe C.S. Lewis series to him because I had never read it when I was a kid. And he couldn't have been, when we started reading volume one of the five volumes, and he couldn't have been less interested. And I showed him a one-hour video, an older video of the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and we proceeded to read all five books.
I think you can
use media creatively. I'm not anti-media. I say a lot of bad things about media, but that's because I don't think we use it properly.
No, we don't. And you know what? How many parents will encourage their children to assign parts to each other and have put on a play about it? Our children would set up theaters and plays for us to watch when all of us would be home from work or what in the evenings. They'd come on, Mom and Dad, we're going to have a play, and they'd set up a theater for us, and it would be great fun. But you don't see that anymore.
Yes, and there is
we don't have time for our children.
there is a definite link between media time and a decrease in creativity, according to some of the research studies.
Oh, yeah.
Mary, I'm going to ask you to hold on. I'm going to move on. We got a couple more people need to make some comments, okay?
Sure. I'll go ahead and hang up.
All right. Thanks very much for your call.
I wanted to tell you thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate it. You bet. Mike, you're on line one.
Hi. I just graduated with my master's degree, and my wife and I are now planning to start our family. And I had heard somewhere about the, media exposure to preborn children while, in utero. I don't know if there's been any research done on that. I've heard, you can play, classical music to the baby through headphones held against her belly or something. I was wondering, is that true, or is that some, old wives' tale?
As far as I know, there's only one study that just came out in the last year or two, and I can't remember even who did it, but it seemed to indicate that babies who listened to music in utero were no more musically inclined once they came out than babies who didn't. And certainly any other, having them parking your pregnant wife next to the TV set, I think, might not be such a great idea anyway.
Yeah.
So okay, well, don't. There's not a whole lot of research on it.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, also, as Dr. Strasburg has pointed out, also not a lot of evidence to suggest that that's true.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All righty. You bet. Let's take one more caller. Molly, you're on line one.
Hi. I have a question. We have a 18-month-old, very active toddler who has special needs. And because of this, he has special feeding requirements. And it requires him to sit still while we feed him, which can take about an hour at a time. And the only way to get him to sit still is to have him watch TV. It's dangerous if he doesn't sit still. So we've been forced to do this more than we would like. So I'm wondering if you have any recommendations. I hear you say that interacting with them while they're watching is helpful. Is there anything else you would recommend, or any particular programs that you would recommend or not recommend for someone who doesn't have a choice in this?
Right. Well, there's no research on interacting with infants while they're watching TV yet. There needs to be. And our guess from research with older children is that it would be useful and possibly protective.
Okay.
And certainly, if an 18-month-old had to watch TV, mm-hmm. I would find some educational videos for them or Sesame Street. I mean, it'd be a very limited menu of
right.
what I let them watch. Unfortunately, as kids get older, they want to watch, the next big thing. So you've got young children watching older children's programming and older children watching Gossip Girl and teenagers
right.
watching adult programming. And that's not always so good. You'd think
right.
with 300 channels on cable that we could reserve 10 for 2 to 5-year-olds and 10 for 5 to 10-year-olds and 20 for 10 to 20-year-olds, and it just doesn't work like that.
Exactly. So even though there's no research, would you recommend just more interaction while they're
Absolutely.
Watching?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You got to repeat what you're seeing on TV. You can, if you're showing a video or even if you're showing TV and you've got a DVR, you can pause it and say, the letter T, and go over that. So I think there are ways of using media interactively that might not be as detrimental.
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you. For children and adolescents, who has the greatest influence on them? Their parents, teachers, media, something else? And why is that important to realize?
All depends. If parents don't talk to their kids about sex and drugs and everything else, the media pick up the slack. And because parents do such a poor job of sex education, for example, in the United States, and because schools do such a poor job, the media have become the leading sex educator in America today. And that's a pretty chilling statement, because the media are not abstinence only. We just spent more than $1 billion promoting abstinence-only sex education programs, even though they don't work. And yet the media are the leading sex educator, and they are not abstinence-only by a wide margin. So it really depends. You've got to take control. You've got to keep TV sets and internet connections out of the bedroom, because kids watch more and you don't have any control over what they're seeing. And you've got to limit screen time for kids over the age of 2 to less than 2 hours a day.
Is there, or are there reasons why children and adolescents may be more susceptible to media messages than, say, an adult?
Absolutely. Young children are extremely susceptible. They don't have our intellectual faculties. They don't have our experience. Young children under the age of 7 are actually defenseless against advertising, according to the Federal Trade Commission report from 30 years ago. And they think that what they see on TV is absolutely real, the way real adults behave in the real world, which we obviously know is not true, or we hope is not true, especially with reality television these days. So yes, they're very susceptible, and teenagers and preteens are very susceptible because they're looking for clues about how to deal with other people, how to deal with the opposite sex. You know, if you're wondering why your teenager is suddenly using bad language, just turn on the TV set or go to the movies.
Are there other important issues regarding the media and adolescence? We've kind of not spent a lot of time on adolescence, and I want to give you a chance to comment on the media and adolescence as well.
Probably the best researched aspect of all this is media violence. We've known about media violence for 60 years. There were Senate hearings in 1952 about whether media violence causes real-life aggression. And the answer now, after thousands of studies, is yes. It's a contributor. Is it the leading cause of violence in society? Probably not, but it's a good 10-20% contribution that we could do something about. So if you look at, for example, the schoolyard shooters, and I know there was one a long time ago in Bethel, Alaska, there's been school shootings in virtually every state in the United States now. If you could talk to those kids, they would tell you, I'm the good guy, those were the bad guys, that's why I had to shoot them. And that's what you learn from American media, the notion of justifiable violence, good guys versus bad guys. And that's, of all the things we talk about with media, that's potentially the most dangerous.
Here's an email that I've received. It says, please comment on strategies and research to help parents convince teenagers to limit their time spent on iPhones, Facebook, texting.
Well, that's tough. I think, first of all, you've got to start when they're young and limiting TV time and screen time. If kids are brought up with appropriate limits when they're 4, 5, 6 years old, if they're not given cell phones until they're 10, 11, 12, if their cell phones when they're 10 years old don't have picture phone cameras in them, they don't need cameras, you have to set limits. And it's very difficult these days for parents to set limits. Certainly, keeping an internet connection out of the bedroom helps with teenagers. They'll object, and keeping TV sets out of the bedroom.
Another email. This is a woman who has written and said, I was allowed to watch TV as a kid and felt like I was not allowed, and I felt because of this I was definitely missing something. As a result, I felt like I didn't want my children to feel that they were missing something and were able to converse better with their peers. This has now come full circle, and I've severely cut back the amount of media my children are exposed to. Is there any way to counteract the damage and opinions and so forth?
Well, the easiest way to counteract it is not to allow it to happen in the first place, and to control what shows they watch, and to talk to them about what they're seeing, and limit the amount of time that they have. One violent movie is not going to make your child violent. One violent TV show is not going to make your child violent. It's the cumulative effect over many, many years. So I don't want to alarm parents unnecessarily. And I my kids grew up with TV. My wife grew up without a TV set in her home, but we grew up with TVs in our home. Because I do think it is now a cultural phenomenon, and kids do kind of feel at a disadvantage when they go to school and they can't talk about, you know, whatever was on the night before. So I kind of agree with that. But I think there have to be limits. It's common sense.
When we have discussed health reform in this country, I've tried to make it a point to look open-mindedly at what's going on around the world. And I'd like to ask you if you can answer the question, are we different in the amount of time we're spending in front of a TV or a computer or media in general than other developed countries?
Other developed countries are catching up to us rapidly, and there are a number of studies in other countries, Japan, the UK, Australia, that kids are watching nearly as much TV in those countries as they are in the United States. And obesity, for example, is now a worldwide problem. It is not just the United States. It is everywhere. So it is truly a global market. We are becoming rapidly one world, and it's just going to increase because, you're going to be out in the middle of the Sahara Desert and have connectivity to the Internet pretty soon, if not already, for all I know.
We've got about 5 minutes left, and I can't help but want to make another comment about health. I was recently doing some research for a talk I'm about to give on vitamin D and asthma and allergy, and I came across some information about how little time or how much time we are not spending outdoors compared to what we were just 20 and 25 years ago, which since vitamin D is primarily gotten from sunlight and was very poor in food substances, it just made the point. That's why people who live in very sunlit areas of the world are deficient in vitamin D or insufficient in vitamin D. So and what they're doing indoors, I'm assuming to a large degree, is in front of TVs and computers.
Yes. Absolutely.
All right. Also, while doing the research for this program a little bit, I ran into the fact that there was a 2010 World Summit on Media for Children and Youth in Sweden, and one of the goals was, I think it's something you're going to agree with, I was going to ask your comment, is that, quote, children should not be discouraged to participate in media, is the point, but should be taught how to use the media. And I think that echoes very much what you said at the beginning of the program.
Yes, it does. I think you can have kids produce counter ads when they see smoking ads or alcohol ads. A lot of very successful media education programs have kids do their own short films or their own takeoffs on advertising. Canada has a wonderful website called adbusters.com, and they do spoofs of very famous classic TV commercials. So teaching kids how media are made, who controls media, increasingly it's just a few corporations that are controlling not just television and movie studios, but publishing houses as well, and that has implications, political, economic, social implications. There's a lot to learn about media. It's quite fascinating. And as I said, it may be as important as as learning about the Revolutionary War or the War of 1812, or, you know, where the Sudan is.
In our last minute or so, let me hit you with, ask you to comment on what would be your most worrisome myth or misconception about media and children and adolescents.
I think the most worrisome myth is that if we advertise birth control, which, by the way, the vast majority of American adults favor, if we advertise birth control, somehow that will give kids the wrong idea, and they'll go out and start having sex. There are no good studies that show that, and there are 8 good studies that if you put a fishbowl full of condoms in a school-based clinic, it doesn't decrease the age at first sex, it doesn't change the frequency of sex, it just makes condom use more, it just increases condom use. So we give kids all these wrong ideas about sex, and then we, when they turn around and become sexually active, we don't let them have birth control or emergency contraception. And we should be advertising that. We have the highest teen pregnancy rate in the Western world. We should be advertising birth control. It is not dangerous to do so. That's the biggest myth.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Any final comments? Got about a minute or so. I'll let you free thought.
I would be curious why parents, I'm trying to do some research now, why parents take their young children to see PG-13 and R-rated movies. We're trying to do a study in New Mexico. Because every time I go to a PG-13 or R-rated movie, there's a dozen 5-year-olds or 7-year-olds sitting in the audience seeing stuff that's clearly inappropriate for them. So is it because you can't afford a babysitter, or you were taken to movies when you were that age, or you think it's harmless? I'd love to know. And I would certainly discourage parents from doing that.
Again, because of that concreteness of their child's brain at that time, that's what they believe is the way things are. They don't have that breadth of experience about what's good and what's bad and what's safe and what's not safe. Is that right?
Sure, sure. Mm-hmm. If you have a disagreement with a pal of yours and you don't like what he says, you haul off and sock him. And the worst thing that happens is you have to shake your hand because it hurts a little. You don't get a boxer's fracture, which is actually what happens in real life.
Dr. Victor Strasburger from the University of New Mexico, thanks very much for this very informative hour. I appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You bet. It's Dr. Victor Strasburger, an expert on the media's effects on children and adolescents. Next week, we're going to be back. My guest will be Ricky Keene. Ricky is a sports dietitian. She's got a breadth of experience, and we'll be talking about nutrition at your table all the way through to the NFL. So why don't you join us and have your questions and concerns addressed. Pat Yack is Vice President of APTI News and Public Media. Kristen Spack engineered today's program, and I saw her answering the phones as well. So thanks for listening, and especially to those of you who called and emailed. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard. Have a great day.
Line 1, Your Health Connection, is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available on our website at kska.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.